Welcome to the Kickstart Podcast, where we highlight the stories of how professionals kickstarted and navigated their successful careers. My name is Preston, and on this episode, we have the pleasure of hosting someone who started his successful career both in investment banking and consulting before becoming the CEO and co-founder of Float, a platform that will transform the mental health care market. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely our pleasure. So I think it's a fitting way to ask and give it back to you. For those that don't know who you are, who might be unfamiliar with your background, would you mind sharing a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Chris Mitchell, co-founder, CEO of Float. I started the business with my co-founder, Daniel, about a year and a half ago. So in terms of what would be helpful, kind of give a little bit of professional background, where I'm from and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Sure. So I was an undergrad, grew up in the New York area, went to undergrad at Georgetown. I was in the School of Foreign Service, like an international affairs program there, focused on East Asia and Africa. So afterwards, that led me to go move to Hong Kong, and I worked in investment banking for a couple of years there. After doing that for a couple of years, realized that I actually wanted to be back living in the US, continue my career progression. So shifted back to New York, worked at BCG for about 5 years. And then in 2021, I decided to leave BCG to co-found Float.
That's amazing. So for the audience, and to add further context to what you were kindly able to share, is what attracted you to investment banking and why did you go from investment banking to consulting? I know a lot of people who go to college choose either consulting or banking before kind of pivoting out. So what, just for people who are curious and the listeners who are curious, would you mind just sharing a little bit more about your kind of background?
Yeah, I think the rationale to go into investment banking straight out of undergrad, it was a couple things. One, you know, I was at the time a junior in college. A lot of people were beginning to apply to internships, and there's just sort of a natural momentum that many people in my program were applying to banking. And so I was curious about it. I think that a few things that I was seeking to get from it were, one, really good professional training experience that was broadly applicable. I feel like a lot of banks run really good training programs that set you up for a career in any path. And it felt like it would be a good place to learn basic sort of, you know, I don't know, Excel, PowerPoint, like all that kind of stuff, but then also to get exposure to a topic area that I was interested in, which was financial markets. So in undergrad, I studied economic development in China and sub-Saharan Africa, as I mentioned before. And it felt that, you know, I'd spent a lot of time doing research on how financial markets work, what it means to give someone access to credit. And there's no better place, really, I feel, than an investment bank to understand what does it look like to structure a deal? What's the process that you need to go into to set that up? How do you do like financial modeling? How do you understand financial metrics? There's just like a financial literacy component to what I thought the experience in investment banking would give me that I was seeking, and it definitely satisfied that. So combination of broad professional exposure, some hard skills, and particularly in an area that I was interested in, which was like financial markets.
And then how did you stumble into consulting after that?
When I was working in banking, I was doing a take private of a company in Southeast Asia. And as part of the process, what we did was we would develop like market report that would be distributed to potential debt investors that would buy the credit of the company that we were taking private. Now, as part of this, like, big report that you put together, which is like a lot of legal documentation, analysis on the industry, the company, financial metrics, we receive a research report on that business. And BCG had actually done the research on this business and put together like what I thought was a super interesting and well-articulated assessment of why this was an attractive investment. And we kind of took a lot of that work that the BCG team had done, integrated it into the work that we were doing that then helped us market the debt on this transaction. And after this experience, taking a step back from what I had been doing for the previous year in investment banking, I just thought that was the kind of work that I thought would be really interesting because it was broader than just sort of like financial analysis and company analysis to like, I don't know, how does this business fit into an industry? How do you think about market dynamics? And I also had spent some time meeting with consultants as part of this process where I got to see the presentation skills and communication skills that they had developed, presumably through that job, by spending a ton of time with clients. And those are just things that I thought would be like desirable for my own career and professional development. So kind of just started the process, and I can talk more about kind of what that process looked like if it's helpful, but that was what sparked the interest in shifting from banking to consulting.
Mm. For those that are actually curious about maybe perhaps getting into either industries, do you have just quick advice, quick fire advice on how to ace or do well the interview process for both banking and consulting? And perhaps maybe if you can just share a follow-up thought, like what was one thing that you really liked of both experiences, and what was maybe one thing you really didn't like?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing is just as part of the process of the recruiting for any of those jobs is like talk to as many people doing the job as possible. Even if you think that you've like talked to 10 people at say a couple of the investment banks, it never hurts to like expand that group of people that you speak to as much as possible. Even if you're going to them asking similar kind of questions, like it pays off. And I think for me, it helped my understanding of what the job would actually entail, so that in the interview process, I presumably came across as better informed about what the job was going to be and became a better candidate because of that. I think it helped me tailor my resume, tailor like the types of things that I focused on in response to interview questions. And at least with consulting, I did this more with the transition to consulting than when I worked in banking, but I had so many calls and I felt like I really understood what the job was going to entail, and it felt like it was really the right fit for me at the time. Like when I transitioned out of banking, I did apply to jobs in like big tech, some startups, as well as consulting. And throughout that process, I felt like consulting was going to be the thing that satisfied what I wanted in my career at that stage. And I got that conviction through all the conversations I had with people. And it turned out to be true. I mean, I had like a really amazing experience for the next 5 years at BCG. And I think that was partially due to just the upfront work that I had done by meeting with people to understand what the job was going to be. So that's the biggest thing, like talk to as many people as you can. And I always found people were willing to set up like a quick 20-minute call. It could be coffee, it could be over Zoom, but just to have those conversations is critical, I think, to the interview process or before you even get started. It's something that I liked and disliked about each job. So with banking, and this is actually kind of similar to consulting, but like it's an amazing environment to learn in because you get exposure to, at the time it felt like things that I was honestly like ill-equipped to be doing, but you get a ton of support from your team. And really the initial year or two is just like, you got to learn and you're filling in gaps where the rest of the team is not able to, just kind of like general leverage. But I mean, it was amazing. And I got to travel around Southeast Asia and China, meeting with like C-level leadership teams, figuring out like what their capital market strategy was going to be and working on transactions that were really critical to those businesses. So I just really got a good understanding, I felt, of kind of how you finance a company and got exposure to some cool businesses that I hadn't been aware of previously and got some travel in as well. Something that I didn't enjoy as much, I felt. So one thing that, and I think that kind of as you progress in that career, you get more of like a strategic level view on, you know, how your team is focused on certain types of client services. But I think as a junior person, I felt like the IPOs that we were running, whether it was in Thailand or Philippines or Indonesia, I felt like there was a lot of similar process that went into each that we were running through each time. And I think that I was looking for broader exposure beyond finance, which just in that job, you know, you kind of like you hone a process and you execute that a number of times and you build that skill set and then figure out ways to transition more into like selling a transaction. And I think that I just wanted to take my career in a different path than that, that exposed me to gave me exposure to other things in the company than just that like finance sort of capital markets type of function. So I was investment banking consulting. I mean, I think that, two things that were awesome about that experience. One, just like the diversity of work that I got to do. Every few months, I would be on a different project. And it was anything from like, you know, figuring out how to reprice a loan book for a commercial bank and like change the way that their relationship managers went out and sold loans and priced those loans, to working in an emerging market to help a government set up a fund that was going to support like what would become an export-import bank and like figuring out the structure and process in that. So just a huge diversity of types of work that you get exposure to, and doing it at a pretty senior level at a young age was really like an amazing experience. So one of the downsides of that job, I think honestly, one of the hard things is, and I think that a lot of firms are working on this, is like the cadence of travel. I think that it's hard to sustain like a personal life alongside frequent travel, frequent work travel. But I'd say that was probably, yeah, one of the downsides for me.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing. So then how do you go from a successful job and career at a Big Four consulting to now founding your own tech startup? So what inspired you to start Float? Was it just you alone? Was it you and another co-founder? Did you do it on the side when you were at BCG? Did you just completely quit BCG and cold turkey it all in? Like, what were their early days like?
Yeah. So I initially had thought about the idea for the business about 5 or 6 years ago. Just a high level of what the business is, to, because I think the context is helpful, is we're a payments platform for clinicians in mental health, and we're also expanding into other verticals. But really simply, what we do is make it so that when you go pay for any type of healthcare visit, if it's out of network and your insurance doesn't cover it, but you're eligible for some reimbursement, we take care of that whole process for you so that you just pay the net amount or that net responsibility, and we take care of filing your claim and collecting reimbursement from your insurance company. So the benefit to the patient, it's kind of a payments gateway, just like Square did for sort of small businesses. We're doing this for healthcare, integrate with insurance company data so that patients, when they're paying through Float now, pay on average about 30 to 40% less out of pocket than they had been than they had been previously, and really simplify a lot of the administrative work around like collecting on insurance reimbursements.
And saving a ton of time too.
Saving a ton of time, yeah. But so the motivation for that was really, you know, having been someone who consumes healthcare services as most of us in America do, and realizing that despite having great benefits, there's still a lot of complexity to accessing the right services or the right care for you at any given point. And based on my experience in doing a bit of work with tech companies as well as financial services companies, realizing there's an opportunity to build technology that solves a lot of this problem around like understanding cost of care, collecting reimbursement. So I thought of this 5 or 6 years ago. You know, I had spent some time at BCG. As I was at the firm, I increasingly shifted to work more with earlier stage companies. So I spent part of that time on secondment to B Capital, which is a venture capital fund that was a partner of BCG's. And while I was with B Capital, I was working with companies and kind of like the Series B stage on revenue growth and strategy. And I just realized that I really enjoyed being in more of an early stage environment, because there's just like a broad range of problems that you're trying to solve. Everything is like the feedback loop between when you test something and when you see the impact is very quick. And I found that to be like pretty motivating. So I was at the time interested in doing something at either a startup or starting my own company. And then this idea around payment system and healthcare, it just felt like there was a need. And I spent a couple of years still at BCG thinking, you know, I'll talk to a bunch of people, see if it's an opportunity, consider leaving to go do it. And every couple of months I would do that and then pull back and say, oh, it seems like there are these other companies out there addressing a similar problem. Finally, you know, I think COVID actually had something to do with this as well, having a bit more time on my hands at home. I decided to take a few months off from BCG because I kept on coming back to this idea, thinking that it was kind of the thing I was like losing sleep over, waking up like 3 o'clock in the morning, like, oh, I think that this could be a real business. So I was like, okay, I have to give it a try. And the way that I was going to go about testing it is talk to as many people in the market as possible. So who would be the potential customers, like clinicians that are independent providers in the mental health space. So I did, I ran a survey with like probably 50 or so clinicians, interviewed most of them, talked with people at health insurance companies, other stakeholders in the market, and pretty quickly like validated that it was something that the people I was talking to wanted and saw there was a gap for. And at the same time, who became my co-founder, Daniel, he's an old friend who known for a while. And I knew he had a background in digital health product. And at that time, he was in a transition point professionally. We started chatting about it, and it just organically happened that he started to put together wireframes for what a product was going to look like. And we got a couple of clinicians that we had surveyed to say, yeah, if you build this, we'll use it. And so my sabbatical from BCG after a few months turned into, oh, I think that this is something that I'd actually be interested in pursuing full time. And so left in summer of 2021, and Daniel and I officially started it then.
That's amazing. It seemed like all the right things had to happen for you to kind of make that jump, whether it's COVID, sabbatical, crossing paths again with your co-founder now, who had a technical background, who could help with like the early wireframes. That would have been my follow-up question for someone who came more from a consulting strategic business background. Was your co-founder, you know, did he also have a technical background? It seemed like he did a little bit to kind of get the early versions of the product up and running.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very natural fit, and got very lucky at each step of this process. Someone who had a lot of digital health experience, friends, someone that I trusted and was excited to start it with. And it was just complimentary to my experience.
What would be your advice at this point in your career juncture of leaving an established job where you can easily just ride into the sunset and have a successful career at BCG if you wanted to, for an idea, right, of a product or a service that you want to build? For a lot of people, that crossroads is extremely stressful and scary. So like, if you were to give one advice, what would it be for those who kind of want to follow in your footsteps to do just that?
Yeah, I mean, figuring out how to get comfortable with a journey and like give myself like the proof points at each step that it was worth continuing to pursue was really important. So before I like just dropped everything and left BCG, because I honestly had an amazing experience and I love BCG. I think it's a great company and I would have been very happy staying there. I think that for me, it was taking advantage of the opportunity to have a couple months off from work to explore this. It was really beneficial. And I know that that's unusual to have a company that is supportive of taking a sabbatical. So it was, I think that the first step for me though was like, figure out if the idea is something that there's demand for. Like, does the value prop resonate? And how do you remove all the biases that you may insert into asking someone, like, would you use this product if it were built? Figuring out ways that you can do that early on to give yourself confidence that it's an idea that where there's demand and it's worth pursuing full time. But otherwise, just like, I don't know, there's no way around just trying it.
Just gotta do it. Yeah. A question I had is, were you bootstrapped for a while? Did you immediately, upon a successful MVP and some feedback, did you guys raise an official seed? You're just off to the races?
Yeah, so that was one thing that we were both, Dan and I were both pretty conscious of, like wanting to make sure that when we did raise, we were at a point where we could invest the capital and begin building. So we also spent some time before raising, collecting a lot of feedback from investors on the idea. So it wasn't just like leave our jobs, say that we're starting this, and then immediately go out and raise. We had a process where we were like, there's still more work that we need to do around like the initial wireframes, what the product flow looks like, better understanding of like target market that we wanted to do. So we put together like, or put our best foot forward with investors. And part of that process was we went to a couple conferences to talk to a lot of people in like the fintech and healthcare world, because part of our product requires integration. So figure out who would be those vendors that we would want to integrate with, like really like put more substance behind the idea so that when we did eventually get to the point of raising money, we knew what we would do next, like what would be the next steps after that. And it wasn't like raise money and then figure it out.
You were very intentional with your plan. And so I think that's great. I think to your point, a lot of people just assume that just raising capital will solve all their problems, or they just immediately have a strategy or roadmap afterwards. But it's great to hear that you're very intentional, put a lot of thought into it, being resourceful, collecting that feedback, really doing whatever you can to kind of create and maximize the chance of the success for your product and establishing stickiness and any sort of traction that you can to kind of create the best MVP to then obviously leverage that capital to kind of accelerate growth. So I think that's fantastic. And I think a lot of founders should do that instead of just kind of hoping for extra kind of capital in the bank account to solve all your problems and kind of give you a strategy when actually it won't.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so now, how far along are you on the product? Where are you in the roadmap? What can people kind of expect if they're listening? Maybe perhaps new features are going to be launched this year. Any new insights would be great.
Yeah. So we ran a pilot with about 20 clinicians for the second half of the year to prove out that the value prop resonated and that the product, all the product functionality that we talked about worked. I think we demonstrated that pretty clearly through December. And then since December, we've transitioned to begin onboarding more practices. So in the past couple of weeks, we've onboarded a lot of clinicians. The next 6 months is going to be focused on growing the number of clinicians on board. We have a couple of pilots running with telehealth platforms right now to seeing how we transition from currently the product, we have a clinician front end and a patient front end, as well as like all of the back end and like integrations, testing what the product could look like if it is just like an API offering for other platforms to build on top of and just become like the horizontal payments infrastructure layer for digital health businesses. So I think over the next 6 months, what we'll see is continue to build out the functionality needed to serve our initial use case of like independent providers and practices in the mental health space. We'll further develop the like the API offerings that we can provide to telehealth platforms. And we are also looking at how our product can serve just a broader range of healthcare payments use cases.
For providers and practitioners, are you mainly targeting smaller practices, mid-size, large, all of the above? For people who are just unfamiliar, how big is the market here in the States? Like how many providers are there to kind of provide more context?
So there, within mental health, there are 500,000 providers in the US, and it's a fragmented market and many of them are out of network. I think a year ago, there was a study with like 70% of clinicians don't accept insurance in the mental health space. But our initial target is either independent clinicians, but I think really the group practice market, like clinician-owned and operated practices, is I think where we're resonating the most strongly right now. And that's, they have anywhere from a couple of clinicians up to like 20, 30, 40, and they're distributed throughout the country. We're also working with some, as I mentioned, some telehealth businesses, which I think you'll see continue to pop up in like the healthcare landscape. But our products, you know, this is our initial, you need to focus, I think, on a target customer initially when you are like at the early stages, but the product has much broader applications beyond this core initial space.
How big is your team currently?
There are 6 of us and we are about to onboard our 7th on Monday. So
that's amazing. As you know, in 2023, it's a rocky market, rocky economy. Building is incredibly challenging for many founders out there. Even getting your first 3 can be quite a feat for a lot of early stage teams. So what would you say to other founders who are building just like you or alongside you? What is maybe one insight or maybe one advice, like maybe your favorite recruiting channel, or what would be maybe like a one tip to kind of get your solid kind of founding team that you have at your company?
Yeah, I mean, recruiting is really hard. And it's like one of the things that aside from getting customers, like I feel like recruiting is like another major challenge in like starting a company. But one thing that we found that has worked pretty well for us is starting people working on a contract basis or even like part-time. We've had a couple of people on our team that shifted from doing part-time work to become full-time. And that, I think especially at the early stage when you're just like you need anybody to help that is willing. I think not shying away from that. Like I think at the earliest stages, companies are always kind of put together from like in an imperfect set of circumstances. Like you're not going to be able to offer an amazing comp package and like amazing health benefits and security and stability, because that's just not what a typical startup environment entails. And figuring out ways to work with candidates, help them understand what you're building, get them excited about what you're building just through seeing it and experiencing it is kind of the way that it was successful for us. And we feel very fortunate with the team that we've been able to build.
Happy to hear that. Are you guys fully distributed? Do you have an office? What is your stance on that?
Yeah, so we're fully remote right now. Our team, I guess 4, soon to be 5 of us are in the New York area. So we do periodically meet up in New York City and do like a couple days of working together. I think that remote work at startups is probably the way that it's going to look for the foreseeable future, just because finding talent that has the right skill set, excited about the business, that is available at that time, it's very hard. And if you limit yourself to a particular geography, especially when you're like in the first couple of hires, I think it just makes it very challenging to get the team together that you need to be able to build whatever business you are trying to build. And that being said, we bring everybody together every few months. So that's, I think that in my ideal world, I would love to have an in-person team and culture, because I think that, for the type of culture that is great to be able to build, you can't get around to spending time in person. But I think the realities of how difficult it can be to hire in the very early stages, it's better to be able to broaden your like geographic scope.
Speaking of culture, what would you say is like the X factor, the reason why someone should join your team and your company?
I mean, I think that it is one, the type of like camaraderie and community that we are building, each person on the team, the contribution that they feel that they can make to the business, but having an environment in which it feels like each person on the team does have a shared set of values, wants to be supportive, I think very aligned towards the mission of the company. All these factors I felt like have contributed to a really positive culture for us. But yeah, I think that, you know, the team dynamic, the quality of responsibility alignment against the mission, and the type of, you know, we also just like kind of have fun together. It's like, yeah, it's hard to say exactly what the X factor is, but I feel like there are a couple elements to it.
Fantastic. What would you say, Chris, is your leadership philosophy for people who are listening, who maybe perhaps resonate with your story, with the mission behind your business, and are curious about what would it be like working with you? Like, what would you say that would be?
A leadership philosophy. I feel like my general thinking about leadership is one, you know, I don't have every single answer. The business that we're building, it's complicated. It touches payments, financial services, insurance, healthcare. And in order to build a successful team, you need to empower each person on the team to be comfortable contributing, speaking up, expressing their opinion, and making, you know, sort of decisions for themselves within the context of like the risk, the sort of risk mitigation trade-offs that everybody has to make. But I think my leadership philosophy is like, I want to be able to empower everybody else on the team to be the most successful and effective person that they can be. And one of the things that I took away from my last career experience is that the most successful and effective member of a team is going to be someone that feels like there's like an alignment between their personal goals and the team goals. And setting up an environment that, you know, if one person on the team has a desire to say in the future they want to be a head of growth at a company that is X number of people in scale, if you have someone on the team that you think could develop into that position, or that has that aspiration, from the very beginning, talk to them about what that would look like to get there and set up the environment steps for them to be able to hit that target. Because if they feel like they're moving down the career path that is most desirable to them, which can align with the company goals as well, that's going to lead to the best outcome for everyone. So as like a leader, I see myself as more like in an enablement and like support type of relationship with a lot of people on the team to just help everybody kind of align towards set the company mission, and then figure out how everybody individually can contribute to that and be the best version of themselves in that environment as possible.
As your company continues to grow and scale, you start onboarding more clinicians. Ultimately, you know, your team of six will need to kind of expand. So what are some possible positions top of mind that you think you might be hiring for in the future? And if people who are listening are excited to apply, where can they apply?
Yeah. So key roles, we are recruiting for engineers, full stack engineers. Our product is pretty back end heavy, so there's a lot of needs there, and will continue to be over the near medium term. We have customer success is really important for our business. You know, getting an initial clinician signed up is one thing, but then figuring out how you activate them and help them use the product to the greatest extent possible is also really important. So customer success and operations is another area where we're going to be focused. And we have a couple job postings on our website, and that is www.floatfi.com. So that's FLOATFI.com. If you go to our careers page, there are a few postings up there, and anybody can reach out if they are interested through our either directly to me on LinkedIn or our contact us form on the website.
Aside from the typical stuff that you find on people's LinkedIn profiles, cover letters, and resumes, is there something that you find or you would see in some person's background that you're like, oh, wow, this is actually really cool? Kind of like an asterisk or a cherry on top.
Yeah, I think that like two things that I'm always drawn to are, one, if someone has a passion or an interest in something, it can be anything, but just like demonstrated interest and motivation to, you know, it could be academic, it could be professional, it could be personal life, just anything that they feel really motivated and inspired to pursue to a high degree. I think it's always really interesting, because then you kind of can get a sense for what drives that person and where their interests are. The other thing that I'm always drawn to is people that can have multiple interests that, you know, maybe, you know, it, they don't always seem to make sense together, but then hearing the story of why that person is interested in those things, I think also kind of makes for a sort of interesting person to work with and build a relationship with. So yeah, I would say there's not like one particular skill or thing on a resume that necessarily is gonna, yeah, be the most striking, but it's kind of like, does this person have a demonstrated history of holding themselves to a high standard and accomplishing something that is like difficult in a particular area? And do they have the ability to have multiple interests and pursue multiple things simultaneously and still sort of like progress and learn and demonstrate curiosity? Because I think that's really what it demonstrates, is like motivation for the first one and then curiosity for the second one.
What is one thing about being a founder that really surprised you that you didn't initially expected or intended kind of starting this journey with Float?
I mean, I think that the thing that is most satisfying is just like building a great team. You know, on every Friday, we do a team meeting where we recap business metrics and how everybody is feeling and tracking about the work and how we're performing together. And that's like the most satisfying thing for me in doing this, is being able to build that like team culture where people feel supported, like they're growing. And I think that in doing that, having everybody feel well aligned towards what we're working to accomplish as a team enables us to deliver better customer service, you know, build a product that better aligns to what our customers want. It's just like, I think everything, it's so rooted in like how well the team is functioning.
A couple more questions. So if you were to go back in time, what would you say would have helped you achieve the highest probability of success? If for those that are listening, is it investment banking or consulting, if they wanted to leverage those experiences to be a founder one day?
I think I wouldn't have been as successful in consulting had I not done banking first. So it's kind of impossible for me to say which one, because I think that they both had a ton of value. Yeah, it's not, I think that they both were super impactful. I think if you had to pick one as an entrepreneur, I think that consulting just exposed me to a broader range of problems, and having like open-ended problem solving as being like the core of what the job was. It's hard to beat that when going to do a startup. But yeah, I think that for me personally, they were both really impactful.
And lastly, as we're kind of nearing the end here, Chris, like if somebody wanted to follow in your footsteps, just have a really great career and maybe just a really great just startup kind of founder experience as well. I know there's a lot of advice you could probably give, but what would kind of be one top of mind that you'd like to share with the audience?
I think, it's funny, like just trusting myself, accepting the unknown. Someone on my team sent me this thing a little while ago. It was like a little bit of like a self-help type video. And the takeaway was, or the message was just like, what if it all works out? And, you know, fingers crossed this all works out. But I think that trusting in yourself and accepting the risk and moving forward into the unknowns is like the only way to pursue this and sort of maintain progress.
If people wanted to check out Flow, perhaps it's future clinicians who are listening, perhaps future patients. And if people also want to reach out to you directly, where can they find out more information about your company? And where can they also reach out to you?
Yeah, so our website, it's floatfi.com. So FLOATFI.com. And you can also reach out to me directly. My email is chris@floatfi.com. Feel free, welcome any emails or LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for your time, for providing us just an honest, real, a story about all the great things that you've done, from great universities, traveling abroad to Asia, to your snapshot experiences in both investment bank consulting, and what led you to become a successful founder at Float. I personally am a huge fan of anything related to health, mental health. I love your mission, love your products. I'm really, really impressed with all the things that you're able to do, despite all the craziness we're experiencing in the job market economy. So I wish you and your team nothing but success. We'll be rooting for you from the side, and wish you nothing but absolute amazing milestones to achieve and to crush in 2023 and beyond.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's great. Great being here.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe for other great stories that are coming up. If you need any help with hiring, know of anyone who's looking for a job, or would like to be a guest on this podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at www.kickstartfinder.com. Really, really appreciate it, and we'll see you on the next one.